You're listening to Extra Time Radio.
That you're the hot boy. People call you the hot boy. What is this about? What are you? What makes you a hot boy? Now, I'm told that when you got to Orlando, you were a little bit shy. Now you're a hot boy. Come back, hot boy Kevin Molino of the Orlando City Soccer Club. Big thanks to hot boy Kevin Molino. I can guarantee you nobody's ever called Simon Ward hot boy.
You're wrong.
I disagree totally.
I know you. You were just waiting.
I disagree
waiting totally.
I'm the love doctor.
Oh.
That's why he's here.
From New York, New York, you're listening to Extra Time Radio on SiriusXM FC, Channel 94 and MLSsoccer.com. David Goss here, Simon Borg here, Andrew Wiebe hosting this and promising right now to never use those two words in conjunction ever again. You know the two I'm talking about. I mean, I love the intro you did for us. You came through clutch, Dave, but I can't help but blush when I listen. It's just a little bit awkward.
It's weird when words become buzzwords in your head. For example, I went on this trip that Bud Light paid for, and I realized how many times I used the term whatever in my actual life. And every time I said it, it sounded really awkward. Yeah. So now this will sound awkward to you forever.
Yep.
Hey, Bud Light's really getting their money's worth for
flying
out there. How many plugs have you given Bud Light on this show?
Dude, you got it.
You definitely have to. You know what? Speaking of plugs, we've been plugging the Scoreborg, and I hesitate to call it that because it doesn't exist yet. For a long time now, for as much as you really like laid into Dave, I mean, on air, off air, it was a campaign of epic proportions.
I left crying every day for 3 weeks.
He actually didn't leave. It was mostly when he got home. But
I'm on the David Goss timeline with Camille.
Oh,
with the
Scoreborg.
Okay.
But the Scoreborg is coming, and it's going to be as good as that intro.
Okay, okay.
No, actually, better. What am I saying?
Yeah, that means you really like that intro, huh? You're a big fan of it.
I like the intro.
I'm going to test.
I come out really looking good from that intro.
You
at the very end here, you are bumbling all over Hot Boy, and then me, I'm the love doctor.
That's pretty. Oh, dang it. That's pretty true. All right, big show for you today. We'll start off with a U.S. Men's National Team roster coming up for two games against Ecuador and Honduras. Of course, the one on Friday against Ecuador, that's going to be Landon Donovan's final match in red, white, and blue. We'll discuss the roster. We'll discuss Landon's role and wonder maybe who wasn't here that should be there. In the second segment, we're going to turn our eye to MLS, a big weekend. Of course, this past one, a lot of playoff implications, a lot of MVP implications. I think we can all agree, and we'll see in the second segment if you guys do, the LA and Seattle are head and shoulders above the rest of the league right now. I think Keenan Oba probably the two MVP candidates now that have separated themselves. And then there's coaches pushing each other in Vancouver, Dallas and the Caps, and they could play in the playoffs. How great
and
is that?
I believe the busting of the ETR curse.
Okay.
Boom. All right. Roasted.
We'll see. And what's going on with Tim Cahill? They're not getting along. Red card. Now he's off to Australia duty. We'll run over all that with Fox Soccer's Kyle McCarthy. He'll give us the insight on that stuff. And then, of course, your mail in the mailbag. Some interesting stuff, including some data on second assists. A lot of people talking trash on Donovan, who set that assist record this weekend. But I got some numbers for him in there. But let's start with the roster. Six MLSers, two in goal, Bill Hamid and Nick Raimondo. Two on the back line. That's Omar Gonzalez and DeAndre Yedlin. One in the midfield and one forward, Luis Gil and Landon Donovan. Then you have a smattering of kind of the normal suspects that you'd expect in this one. Brad Guzan likely will get the start in goal. That Germany connection, John Brooks, Timmy Chandler back there in the defense along with Greg Garza, Michael Orozco from Mexico, and Tim Ream. And then Bedoya, Corona, and Diskrud, that same midfield three against the Czech Republic we saw just a bit ago. Julian Green and Alfredo Morales coming in among the Germans. And then Joe Zhao, Miguel Ibarra. Egg on your face, Simon Borg. Miguel Ibarra is there. We'll see.
We knew he was going to make it. I mean, that sort of news doesn't come out there if he's not going to get called up. Come on.
Yeah, that would be awful for poor Miguel if it did come that way. And then Bobby Wood. So, your first impressions. You have a hankering for humble pie. What's going to go down here?
No, I mean, I think let's see if Jurgen Klinsmann ends up doing what I think he's doing here, which is to replicate the formation, the lineup that performed really well in the Czech Republic. And that first half was one of the better first halves I think we've seen a U.S. team play under Klinsmann. So I look at this roster and I see the 4-3-3 manifesting itself once more. I see Chandler left back in this one, Yedlin at right, then Brooks and Omar Gonzalez in the middle. Then the three that started against the Czech Republic in the middle, Bedoya, Mix Diskrud, Joe Corona. And then up top, it's the three-pronged attack with Jozy Altidore, the highest forward,
easy,
and then you
there have
Green and Zhao on either side of him. Now, that's all depending on whether Donovan is going to start, come off the bench. Either way, I think Jurgen Klinsmann turns this Landon Donovan tribute match, and he turns it into a passing of the torch match. And I think whether Donovan comes off the bench or starts, he will do so for Julian Green. Comes out for Julian Green or
Boy,
goes in
a
for Julian Green.
Fixation on Julian Green.
I just think there's – I think in Jurgen Klinsmann, in his mind, Julian Green is his – the guy he's building around is the guy for the future.
Okay. So now does Landon start? Because you gave us a lineup there in which Landon Donovan doesn't start. And I actually agree with you. And I've been told multiple times today that I'm an idiot because I made a video for MLS Soccer where I predicted that he wouldn't. And everybody said, look, are you serious? Do you want to switch this up here? Because you're going to be wrong. He's going to start this match. I'll explain why I don't think why in a second. But what do you think happens?
I think it'd be more special if he started. To have him walking out of the tunnel, you know, make him captain, armband on, leading the team out. That's special. I think that's the way you'd want to see him go.
I agree with that. I think he starts. I think maybe you do a little something before the game. For the most part, him walking out, him leading the team, the coin toss, all that stuff, the regular stuff, the fans will be cheering during it for him. And then you get to take him off, and that's the big moment. Yeah. That's the moment when I'll be curled up in a ball in the back
just
of Rensselaer.
Just a weeping mess.
Just a weeping mess.
Just David Goss.
Somewhere in between a liquid and a gas substance.
Oh,
that's
wow.
what I'll be.
Did you intentionally use the gas substance there? Because you're always a gas substance. I don't think he – okay, look. I think he'll start. And you guys kind of were convincing me there because I wasn't thinking about the leading out of the tunnel and stuff like that. I was thinking, look, he's got a game on Sunday in Dallas. I have to imagine that the Galaxy expect him back. He'll probably climb on a plane and go there. I was also thinking, you know, this kind of – Cold War maybe is not the right word for it, but Donovan talking to ESPN made it clear that there was still frosty relations between he and Klinsmann, and he's just getting in there Thursday, and he's actually not going to be in a media availability with Jurgen. Jurgen's going to have his press conference, and Donovan will have his press conference on Friday with Sunil Gulati in Bristol at the ESPN offices. What I said in the video and what if it's a perfect world and I'm making the decisions – which it will never be, but I can talk about here, I would bring him off the bench because I think it makes it more special because I think that there's a build-up throughout the whole match. There's a tension in the crowd. There's when is Donovan going to come on? And you get people chanting LD, and, you know, there's this aspect of, you know, really saying, I don't know, the tension and the build-up I think is really special. And then he gets two standing ovations. When he comes on, he gets a huge standing ovation. He goes and he gets the armband from whoever's got it because you know he's wearing it on the field. He plays 20, 25 minutes. You hope he gets a goal. You hope he gets an assist to send it out on the right note. And then he comes off and he gets another standing ovation. You can still do the pregame stuff with Donovan. You can still give him his plaque or whatever it is you're going to do. You know, I think American Outlaws, the reports out there is they have a huge TIFO, 50 feet wide or something, the number 10. You know, we'll see exactly what that is.
And I don't think you do too much of a ceremony because you'll put him in the Hall of Fame at some point over the next few years. Then you do a ceremony at a game, at a halftime. I think this one's mainly just for him to be out there.
And you
there
let the fans handle that.
Yeah,
that's the whole
exactly.
point.
Here's the thing, though. I'm talking about, hey, let's see the team that we saw in the Czech Republic. So I know, like me, there are a lot of fans out there that are saying, okay, let's see what this game gives us in terms of verdicts on the team and how they play. So you're talking Donovan. I think this Donovan, Klinsmann's going to have to minimize the impact that the Donovan ceremony, playing time, has on actually seeing the team perform.
I actually think it's great because it's a lot of young players and it's dealing with something. And it's more pressure because it's more media attention than you'd get on a normal off-friendly against Ecuador. And I think having to deal with not being sidetracked by this is great for players like Julian Green and Greg Garza and young players, Bill Hamid, who don't have experience. I think it's great.
I think you're overreacting there.
Okay. Maybe.
Simon, how long do you plan?
I'm the overreactor,
Simon.
If
he starts.
I mean, if he starts the game, I think you take him out after 20 minutes. I think play him a full half is to say, hey, you've been a part of this team. You kind of know the group. You know how we play. And you've trained with us this week. And that's not been the case. So I think it has to be, whatever it is, it has to be a short span of time.
What if he goes Temo Blanco on it and is the best player on the field?
Mm-hmm.
That would be an interesting turn of events.
Yeah, that would be.
But here, I'll give you this now. Does Landon Donovan shed a tear? Will we see a tear rolling down the eyes of Landon Donovan? And if so, when do we see it?
Oh, the win part is the difficult part. Will he? I think he certainly will because I think it's just too special a moment. And it's about him and the fans, I think, in this case for him. And he's kind of referred to that. He said, you know what, I didn't feel that great about this in the kind of the aftermath of the whole being cut from that Brazil roster. But then people are coming up to me. They're saying, we're going to Hartford. We're going to see you. We can't wait to see you. I think that's the special part for him. End of the chapter?
Yeah,
I
agree with you. So I think it's actually pregame. I think it's during anthems or something when it hits him, when the fans –
the banner?
Whatever it is that happens. I don't think it's going to be as intense as it would be because I think he mentally is looking at the last LA game. Because he's about to retire from the game, not just from the national team. So I think while there will be something, and of course, like I said, I will be in a ball, he won't, I think, until that last LA game.
Yeah. I'm willing to put a bet. I don't think we see him shed a tear in this one. And I think part of the
double helping of Humble Pie.
What
Humble
goes pie. Into my mind is he knows that, you know, maybe Klinsmann wasn't really on board with it. Maybe it's a little bit, not forced, but like, you know, others in
US soccer.
It didn't
feel completely natural.
And right. So I think that – I don't know that he warms up to it completely.
But I think when he gets out on the field and sees the fans that are there, they're there to support the U.S. national team. That's 100% true. But they're also there for this moment with him. I think that's when it hits him.
When you go to this game, nobody's out there saying, hey, I'm going to the Ecuador game at Rentschler Field in East Hartford. They're saying, I'm going to Landon Donovan's last game.
Yeah.
If you're talking about this game, that's the way you're describing it. End
and
story.
I think most of the fans would go anyway because you want to see what Joe Jow does. You want to see Julian Green up close. You want to see these guys. Like, this is what it is to be a fan. But this is the big thing that's happening.
So we should – do you know already where you're sitting in that game?
Yeah, I'm not sitting very close.
Do you have a ticket?
Yes.
Because I think we need to pass that information along to the TV producer so
do
they
it?
Can lock
so,
in
yeah,
on I'm the crying guy. Like, yes, tell me, is there a fan who would be okay with being caught on national TV crying?
I'll be like the Timbers fan.
But you'll be the Landon Donovan.
Would you?
Guy.
How would you feel about that?
I would not like to be on TV on that in that moment at all.
No,
I mean I don't know how I'm going to react. I'm joking when I'm saying I'm going to be a ball, but like,
you're joking now.
I'm wearing my LD.
He's back
number 21 jersey. Like I'm going to be there. I'm there for him.
Okay,
me and him are two peas.
We'll see what happens with that one. Hey, look, there's still the game to be played. You mentioned it though, Simon. Your lineup is very similar to mine. I would start Garza on the left. I would keep it the way you are on the back, although I could see him go Orozco for Omar Gonzalez. I don't – you know what? In a perfect world, I'm going to throw Alfredo Morales on just because I want to see him play. And I think you need somebody maybe more of the holding role.
Maybe in place of a Corona?
Yeah, maybe in place of a Corona, although I think Corona's been playing well lately. I'd like to see a mix and match in this game. And this is just one roster. It's going to be completely different for Honduras because we don't see the likes of Michael Bradley. We don't see the likes of Clint Dempsey. We don't see
Graham Zusi, Matt Beisler. Yeah. I think two of the things to look out for, John Brooks isn't playing with his first team right now, and there's issues there.
Going to be very interesting to see what he has to say. What's the situation with Hertha? Because it's back and forth. Some people, you know, this is a matter of translations here. We should have brought in Simon, Polyglot Borg here to get to lay the – you did learn
some – Still working
some,
on my German.
Yeah,
still
you did learn some German. Maybe you could have shed some light. Some people saying he was close to being cut. Other people saying he's been demoted from the first team.
Yeah, and then Julian Green also has been hurt, so he hasn't been playing. Mm-hmm. So we'll see how
some
fit he is.
Now.
But for me, the guy who should be here, after looking at this roster and seeing that he chose to take players from certain MLS teams for this game, not all, is Luis Silva. I think if you're trying things out, if you're trying something new, he is something new. If you're giving people
Where does
a shot,
he fit? Where does he fit?
I think he fits as a forward next to Josie in a 4-4-2, not in the 4-3-3. But I can't imagine that you're married to a system, one friendly into it, 4-year cycle.
I'm not saying you're married to a system, but at least give it some continuity. Don't do what you did at the World Cup, leading into the World Cup, where you're switching on guys last minute.
Aren't the guys. This was the team in Czech Republic because no MLS players came, and this is the team now because few. This isn't the team. So, maybe Joe Jow is getting changed up position a little bit. He's not going to be in that.
How do you know this isn't the team?
It may be. It might be the team. No one knows.
Because Dempsey and Bradley
you
can
have
slot into any one of those midfield positions.
Okay, so then,
clearly
you're already making changes.
No, but I'm changing one guy for you.
Okay.
Dempsey, I don't know that Dempsey necessarily is a clean fit into the 4-3-3.
He doesn't fit in that 4-3-3. Probably not, no. What about Miguel Ibarra, though? He could be a clean fit. What do you think here, Simon? He doesn't deserve to be here. Your snobbery is well documented. Will he play? Should he play? Will you cry and curl up in a ball like David Goss if he plays?
I say he does not play in this game So if you want to have a double bet going on this.
Yeah, this is double humble pie.
Double the stakes.
Yeah. I was looking through my bookmarks the other day. I have a bookmark for humble pie. It's
What is this humble pie business?
Looking. I think it's innards. I'll look it up. You keep talking.
No. If it's innards, no. There's
okay,
no chance.
No innards for you? Okay. But does he play? Because you said he doesn't deserve to even be sniffing this. He should be watching this at home.
I think this is mainly training. He's going to be the Jordan Morris of this camp. Meaning you get a taste of training, you're not playing though.
Yeah. And I think Jurgen Klinsmann is about that. I think that's what he wants to bring to this stuff. His legacy, part of it, I think, is being the guy that changes the viewpoint and says, sure, we'll bring in Jordan Morris's. Yeah, we'll bring a fourth division German player to the World Cup. Yeah, I'll do things you're never going to expect because I'm Jurgen Klinsmann and this is my system. I think that's what he's about with this one. Let us know what you think. Let's jump on one thing with the U.S. before we get out of here and get the MLS talk, guys, because there's a lot to talk about. The U23s are also gathering soon. They're going to be in Brazil from the 10th to the 12th and play the Brazilian U23s on the 13th. We ran our eye over this roster, a good number of MLS players, not a lot of them getting a ton of playing time. But, Simon, your method of determining success with this team is whether they not have a superstar name. So I have to imagine the likes of Ben Spencer – he's of the Indy 11. He's probably not one that stands out for you.
The Charlie Horton stands out. The
for
goalkeeper.
What reason?
I mean, for just the name is he's Charlie Horton. I can't see a big time player being called Charlie Horton. I like projecting that, and just the name tells me if you're a star.
Cardiff City disagrees, but
seriously, I agree with you that this group, you look at it, not getting a lot of playing time. You hope that they will in time, mm-hmm. or you're gambling a little and hoping they will. But
it's a young Olympic team. It's not 20. I mean, you have 2 years to go, so they're 20, 21 now. They're not 23 yet. So hopefully they develop into that.
No, but I don't see that. Like right now on paper, this team is not scaring anyone. I'd like to be proven wrong when they actually play a game, and they're going to play a good opponent here in Brazil,
Rubio Rubin, I think, probably the guy that everybody's waiting to see on this roster to assist on the weekend.
Also, William Packwood. We haven't seen him
true.
With U.S.
A lot
teams,
of talk
really.
About him.
Broke his leg. We didn't see him at the U20 World Cup. He's playing a lot for Birmingham City.
Yeah. Emerson Heinemann, you think he got a call into that last camp. He'll be here as well. Let us know what you think. Extra Time Radio on Twitter, extratime@mlssoccer.com via email. The big one I'm curious about here, A, what the heck is humble pie and how do we make one for Simon Borg? And B, what should the U.S. do for Landon Donovan? Should he start? How should they honor him? How would you do it? If you're involved, how are you going to do it? Will we be crying in a ball like David Gus?
We should make our own recipe for humble pie and name it Cameron Carter Vickers.
That actually sounds like a humble pie. Yeah. All right. Well,
for those who are listening, he's a defender on this U23
team. A 16-year-old defender.
That is a superstar name. If you can double as a piece of pie, I think you're good to go on that. We'll be right back. MLS Talk coming right up with Kyle McCarthy.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime@mlssoccer.com or tweet at Extra Time Radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
Hey guys, this is Omar Gonzalez from the LA Galaxy, and you're listening to Extra Time Radio.
Back now on Extra Time Radio with the guys, Simon Borg, David Goss. I am Andrew Wiebe. Was looking for something along the lines of Alt-J. Simon says you really got into it? Or you've been hearing it around now that you got the taste?
I've heard it around. I've heard it, yeah. But let's see if they have more than that one song.
I'll send you some other songs on Spotify. Song. Will you get it if I send it to you on Spotify? Because I see when
How
I see your
happen?
Spotify, it's normally like terrible pop music, which I assume that young Victoria Borg is just jamming out in the house, too. Is that the way it goes?
You're big about trendsetters in music because you just said with them, like, let's see if it's more than just that one.
Yeah.
And that was your thing with the MCs, which you broke down very analytically on the last show.
Which MCs?
When we talked about Zach Iwani and Dempsey.
Right.
And
it was all
Bradley
about body
Phillips.
Of work with
you. Yeah,
you
were all about changing the
I
rap
have a
game.
Feeling, though, that Alt-J probably has a body of work. Just
they do.
Listening
they
to their
do.
Style.
I think I'm pretty sure they're the number one British band out there right now. So that's pretty big. Quickly before we get into MLS, because there's a lot to talk about, but I have to know, who all uses your Spotify account? Because like I said, it is a eclectic group of of things getting played in that.
The whole family does. So my daughter uses it. Her playlist, she likes a song, she puts on a playlist, and her playlist is now like 400 songs long.
Yeah.
I use it every now and then, but I usually I use it offline, like on the subway.
Yeah, that's how I do it too.
My wife uses it, and then my mother-in-law uses it, and she's been the interesting, because I've gotten bumped off when I use it outside the subway. And it's usually something.
Love the relationship.
Some shades of gray there. Yeah. With
so
what
she
your
has 50s Spanish language.
Nice.
Me and my sister shared it for a little, and we'd bump each other off, and it's an odd relationship to have to deal with.
Yeah, I don't mess around with
she
that.
She doesn't know what's going on when like she's getting bumped off, so she just keeps playing.
Just a bump fight going back and forth. Well, there's two people at the top of the – not people, I guess. Two clubs at the top of the Western Conference standings that are doing some bumping right now, and that is LA and Seattle. My thoughts, the best two teams in the league. Their results from this weekend, well, LA shellacks Toronto FC 3-0. Landon Donovan gets the assist record in this one. Robbie Keane continues to solidify his MVP case. And then on Sunday, Seattle does their thing as well. The Colorado Rapids, this time the sacrificial lamb. They are right now, for me, after Chivas USA beat Real Salt Lake in the miracle of all miracles, they're the worst team in MLS right now, the Colorado Rapids. That's tough. That's a tough break for them. But let's turn our attention there to LA and Seattle. They're the two best teams in MLS. Are we right?
What a fascinating battle from a distance that these two teams are having.
I think that they're up there, but I think DC
they're
has
up
to,
there.
I think DC has to be in the conversation.
No way.
I don't think RSL is
at the beginning of the conversation, and then you jettison them.
Maybe, but they're mentioned.
David, okay. It's LA and Seattle, and then everyone else.
Yes. No, I don't think that's true. I think it's LA and Seattle, and then DC, and then RSL and everyone else.
Okay. You're not going to put SKC in there? I know they have had a tough couple months.
No,
yeah.
Absolutely
I think
not.
Like second least points since August 1st, Sporting Kansas City. Tough stuff going on for them. Okay, so Supporters Shield, we're going to have those two games at the end of the year. Matt Doyle said in his article today that he hopes those are the two best games in MLS history. Of course, LA has to play FC Dallas before they get to that point. But is that what we expect? Are these are like two playoff games before the playoffs, right? I mean, this might even be better than that.
Yeah, look, we'll talk about it more when we get there, but it's fascinating for me for the history between these two teams mainly. You have Seattle trying to be the LA Galaxy, trying to be as successful, trying to get over the hump that is the LA Galaxy. LA has caused them so many issues over the years, and they've not been able to get over that hump. And so it's going to be fascinating to watch. But to me, these are two teams. When you look at the managers, you look at the two forwards producing out of their minds, you look at the two MVP candidates, they are mirror teams in a lot of ways.
The two U.S. national team stars.
The two
former, whatever.
Donovan and Dempsey going. I mean, there are so many storylines.
Ozzy Alonso,
Juninho.
Yeah.
Marshall and Gonzo.
Yeah, I agree with you. They're very similar. I think what Oba and Robbie Keane are doing this year is very similar. Because they have moments in games where you're watching and you say, that is absolutely the MVP. That's the best goal I've seen all year, blah, 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 blah. Then you flip on the other one a week later, and they do the same thing.
Yeah, pretty incredible stuff. Hey, before we get to Kyle McCarty here, he'll have some interesting insight on a lot of this, and we'll certainly get him into the Rebs. But you had something you were talking to me about before we came in here, David, and I had a bunch of people on Twitter suggesting that Jermaine Jones is better than Michael Bradley, the reason being, I guess, that he has two game-winning goals. The Rebs, obviously a far superior team right now to Toronto FC. You dug some stuff up.
I did not. Okay. Ben Baer dug some stuff up
there
for us.
There you go. He's our researcher here at MLSsoccer.com.
And there was an article that came out about the English Premier League about important passers on teams. And they said you have to look at the percentage of what a player's passing is of their team. And it ended up being that Mark Noble came out as the most important passer in the English Premier League because he has the highest percentage of his team's passes. And in MLS, Ben looked at all the players over 1,000 minutes this season. It's a list of 225 that I have here, and the most amazing part is that Dom Dwyer is dead last.
Wow.
Behind goalkeepers.
He doesn't need to pass, he just shoots.
2.93 of his team's passes are by him, behind Stefan Fry. Stefan Fry, Donovan Ricketts, Jaime Pineda, Chris Seitz, Deshaun Brown, Luis Robles. Those are just the names right in front of him. Bradley Wright Phillips, also very low on that list. But on top, you have rarely is there much of a difference, maybe 0.02 or 0.03 of a percent is the biggest difference you see between two players. Juninho is second with 15.03, and Michael Bradley is first at 16.54.
All right, those are central midfielders. Give me, if we're going to kill Dom Dwyer, give me the first forward.
No, no, no,
list.
I'm not killing
Who's
Dom Dwyer.
Who's the first forward
on the
list?
What I'm saying is not to kill Dom Dwyer.
The point is that Michael Bradley is by far the most important.
He's a central midfielder.
But compared to the other central midfielders in MLS, he is by far. There aren't very big gaps between players, and his at the top is extremely large, and that's what's impressive. He's right in front of Noguero, Juninho, Beckerman, Pedro Morales, Will Trapp, Dax McCarthy, Ozzie Alonso, Javier Morales. These are the guys that do the same as what he does, but no one does as much as he does.
Huh? There you have it. So I don't think it's about piling on Dom Dwyer. We know that it's his job just to shoot the ball. Look, you make runs, man. You get in there and you uncork one. But it is impressive that Michael Bradley's at that point. A lot of people wondering where the offensive production was. Maybe this is where the value is. I think Toronto FC would know that. It's in controlling the game. Simon Borg scratching his head, maybe not happy. With that explanation, let's bring on Kyle McCarthy now. If Fox Soccer, maybe he can please Mr. Borg here. Kyle, how's it going, man?
Hey, man. I'm doing really well. How are you guys today?
That's that West Coast vibe I can feel from you. You are feeling it. You got some sunshine on your face. Is that right?
Yeah, it's a little relaxing. I left with a sweater, and I'm in shorts now, so that's pretty good.
There you go. Jealousy. Simon Borg in shorts. Not something I want to see. But before you came on here, we were talking about Jermaine Jones versus Michael Bradley, and some people thinking on Twitter, especially coming at the ETR account, saying, look, this is proof. These game-winning goals. Jermaine Jones is better. I have to imagine that you may not agree with that, although you do have some insight, I'm sure, about it. What do you think? The differing roles between these two? Is Jermaine Jones just made for MLS right now, or is this just kind of the opening salvo? You get a couple good plays, you get some highlights, and all of a sudden people are making blanket statements.
He's certainly adjusting well, isn't he? He said after the game, the 2-1 victory over Columbus on Saturday, that he wasn't trying to adjust to MLS. He was just trying to do what he does. And I think his sort of game, that all-action work in central midfield, his willingness to cover a lot of ground, has really benefited him in the early stages of his MLS career. But to say anything about whether he's better than Michael Bradley or whether Michael Bradley's better than him, I think that's something you need to look at over the longer term. I think any MLS team would be lucky to have either of them.
But with in the attacking end of the field, ball at their feet, who would you rather have on your team, Kyle? Michael Bradley ball at his feet around the box, or Jermaine Jones ball at his feet around the box?
Well, it depends what I'm trying to do with it. If you're looking to get the ball through the line, then Michael Bradley's your guy. He can play that little clipped ball over the top. But if you're looking to have an effort at goal, then I think Jermaine Jones has shown that he can really test teams from that distance.
Now, Kyle, we were talking about the elite teams in MLS before you came on, and I think Simon and I were together and saying it's Seattle, LA, and then it's the rest of them. And Dave was saying Seattle, LA, then you got to mention DC United, then maybe RSL and the rest of them.
No, don't mention RSL, just DC.
Okay, just DC United.
Three of them.
I'm thinking about that conversation now after we're talking about Jermaine Jones, and I'm thinking, why didn't we put the Revs in there? Where do the Revs stand in all this? Because all of a sudden, if I'm looking around the Eastern Conference and I'm an opposing coach, they're the last team I want to play. They're the team that I'm the most scared of. Does that track for you?
It's certainly getting there. I think DC deserves a whole lot of credit for what they've been able to do this year, but you just wonder if they're a regular season team, the sort of team that's built to perform over 34 games but might get a little bit exposed in that two-game series. And when you look at the Revs, that's the sort of team that can find different ways to beat you, and that's what's been important for them over the past couple of weeks. They haven't necessarily had their best stuff, but they've managed to muddle through games and get points. So that makes them a threat when you're looking at the postseason.
And how worried are you about, would you be about their backline in a series of not making that mistake in a two-game series and getting them behind before they can really get going?
The backline's performing well for DC, though.
We're talking about
New England. Oh, New England.
Yeah, it's a concern for the Revs that they've had some spells this season where they've dropped their concentration and really found themselves behind the eight ball. If you look at what happened against Kansas City recently, that was a game they were in pretty good control of, and then they had a blip for 3 minutes and gave up 2 goals. You can't really get away with that in the postseason, so that's certainly something they're going to have to manage as the games continue to increase in importance.
And what do you make of Sporting Kansas City here, Kyle? I mean, I contend that I think they've lost a little bit of their edge having won the championship. I just get that sense from the way they play. They're not their usual aggressive selves where they're outworking and out-aggressive. What's the word I'm looking for? Help me out.
Aggressiving is, I think, what you were going to say.
Out-aggressiving the other team.
That's not a word.
What do you see out of them?
I see a team that has had a lot of little things chip away at the core identity over the course of this year. When you look at the transactions, you look at losing players here and there, you look at the lineup shuffling, you look at Matt Beasley playing a lot of games and perhaps not hitting his best form, and all of those things put together, all of a sudden you see a team that's so reliant on that familiarity and that system that they have, and things aren't quite clicking, and then the setbacks start to occur. So it really makes it difficult for them. That being said, I think you can see that it's a different team this year. The question is whether they're going to be able to ramp it up in time for the postseason to make that push that everyone expects.
Well, I'm going to ask you right there. Do you think they have enough to do it? I mean, I think Sporting KC fans out there are hoping that their guys are lying in wait. Do you think this turns around for them? Do you think that they're a threat, to go deep? Can they go deep? Do they have the talent to do it, especially in the midfield?
They're definitely a threat. And when you look at that Eastern Conference, it's wide open. Sporting Kansas City certainly is capable as the other sides are getting in there. They do need more in midfield. They need a little bit of that extra grit to get through. And I think that's been the department that's really hurt them. Uri Rossell's departure has been a concern for them. But I think that they can circle the wagons and really pose a threat to other teams simply because they've got that system that they can lean on, and they've got a knowledge of what it takes to get to the MLS Cup.
Let's talk about another Eastern Conference team here, the New York Red Bulls. They won 1-0 against the Houston Dynamo over the weekend. And look, when I've seen this team play without Tim Cahill in that 4-2-3-1 where Alexander and McCarty are sitting in front of the back line, they look secure, they look balanced, they look confident, and I think that's the way to go. I'm curious, do you agree with sitting Cahill? Do you think that's the right move here?
I agree. I think they have looked better in that 4-2-3-1 without Cahill, and that's not a knock on Cahill. He's clearly a talented player, clearly one of the best 11 players on that team. But in terms of fit, in terms of shape, when Cahill has played in central midfield, the Red Bulls have looked a little open. They found it difficult to cover the gaps that have been created on the counter, and they've looked a little bit exposed. By moving Cahill out of that department, they found that solidity that they need. They found that firm base, and it opens everything up for them and really allows them to focus on what they do well. The question is, how do you balance that heading into the postseason, knowing that you need Tim Cahill on board and you need him to play some sort of a role to help you get to where you want to go?
But look, I mean, Tim Cahill, I'm a little surprised at his reaction here. You know, he's the veteran. He's the guy who's been around the block. He's the guy who does the things that are good, you know, understands the game, understands what the concepts of the game, understand what the unwritten rules of the game are. You know, when he comes, he's coming across really petty to me. And I'm shocked. Are you surprised by what we're seeing?
I think it's a natural tension because you've got a guy like Cahill who's used to playing frequently, who expects to play frequently, and he's not a certain starter at this point. And that has to be something you have to work through as a team and as a club. And I think in the end that Tim Cahill will do what's right for the Red Bulls and will buy into whatever Mike Petke is setting down. But I'm not surprised there's a little friction with how everything has unfolded over the past few weeks.
Now, a couple more for you. We're talking about goal scorers here, and maybe one of the best natural ones in MLS history. He may not have been around for a terribly long time, but hit that 20 mark last year. That's Marco Davao. He will not be back. We haven't really discussed it yet on this show. We haven't really addressed that, his absence, his legacy. When you look back at those years of Marco Davao, when you look back at maybe in 5-10 years, what we think about him in this league, what's his legacy going to be? What's his legacy in Montreal going to be? And can Montreal replace him?
He is not an easily replaceable player. I think when you give it the time and perspective of a couple of years, you'll see Davao's contributions were important for the first steps of Montreal as a club. He came in, he provided an identity, he provided a direction going forward, and he provided a steady presence. He wasn't always on the field. He had some injury concerns here and there. But when he was able to contribute, he provided something. And he represented himself the right way. He comported himself in a manner that helped Montreal create an identity. And that's an important piece of being a designated player in this league. And I think Montreal will have a difficult time trying to find someone who fits the club and fits the mentality as well as Marco DeBio did.
So Kyle, talking about goal scorers, last question before we get you out there, but we have to ask, you have to give us an answer. Who is your MVP right now, Obafemi Martins or Robbie Keane?
Or outside that, Robbie maybe you're on the lean.
Yeah,
win.
Yeah.
No, it's Robbie Keane. He's the MLS MVP. He's been the most consistent player in the league this year. He has played at a high level throughout the campaign, and he's been the guy who has held everything together for the Galaxy, and that's no knock on Obafemi Martins, who would be number two on my list. He's been stellar for Seattle. But Robbie Keane's the MLS MVP, and I agree with Bruce Arena. If you're not seeing that, then there are some questions, certainly.
So then there's questions about me, because I've watched this whole season, and to me, I guess my question to you, Kyle, is what has Robbie Keane done more than Obafemi Martins?
For me, Robbie Keane has contributed more from the run of play than Obafemi Martins. I think he's a little bit more of a versatile threat. I think he's shown a willingness to drop behind the line, and I think he has really provided that touchdown for the Galaxy during that early part of the season where Landon Donovan wasn't much of a factor. Robbie Keane was that guy who was able to put the Galaxy on his shoulders and say, hey, it's me. I'm going to produce, and we're going to get through it until everything's blazed. And I think Robbie Keane has done that since he's come to MLS, and it's been an underappreciated quality of his. I think his consistency is quite remarkable.
You know what you've now done, Kyle? You've created work for Ben Baer, our researcher, because he's going to dig into that now. The run of play numbers for Obafemi Martins and Robbie Keane. And Ben, if you're hearing this podcast, you already have your next
Get
assignment.
Get yourself prepared. Well, dissent there, that's not new on this show. Not everybody agrees with Simon, but we're thankful to have Kyle McCarthy here on this Monday to speak with us. Follow him on Twitter. Check out that Fox Sports blog and everything else he does. A busy man. Enjoy L.A. out there. All right, Kyle?
Hey, thanks for having me, guys. Have a good one.
No problem. Hey, you know what? I'm on the Robbie Keane side right now as well.
Why?
I think
just because Bruce
incredible.
Arena comes
it's
out and says everyone
Bruce,
is a
Bruce
fool.
Arena.
He said basically said everyone's a fool who doesn't pick Robbie Keane.
It's not just Bruce Arena, El Pape.
Who's El Pape?
That's Bruce Arena. I just made up that nickname for him.
All right, that's weird.
He's the Bruce.
I think the consistency point is right there. I also just think that Robbie Keane is the best player on the best team in MLS. And the reason they're the best team, in large part, is because of him. You look at Giassi's artist, you look at Landy Donovan. I know they're having great seasons. I know they would have good seasons on their own. But I think Robbie Keane is the element that takes that to the next level. And you
As
know
is
what?
Obafemi Martins. Well, so Obafemi Martins is not on the field. When he scores a goal, they're like 18-0.
Yeah.
Not only that, but he came off the bench and won them the U.S. Open Cup.
I mean, Obafemi
Martins. He was the difference when he wasn't starting and when he was in.
I would argue that Robbie Keane, and look, he Kyle McCarthy thinks that Robbie Keane makes more of a difference during the run of play. I would argue that this season, that was maybe the case last season, because this season I felt Keane has been less impactful a player. And I think Obafemi Martins, we're going to have to research these numbers.
Yeah, we are.
Well, what I find fascinating is they're so similar.
Yeah.
They're both goal scorers, yet, because I had this argument on Twitter the other day, I feel like Obafemi Martins does great with his back to goal. He's been dropping deep with this Seattle team, and he connects. And one of my reasons for saying he deserves it is when Dempsey was gone, he kept them going through that World Cup break, kept them successful until he could come back and get into form.
Look, the point here is that they're both incredibly fun to watch. I'll admit that. I don't think either way it goes, I'm not going to be unhappy with that result.
But what Obafemi Martins doesn't have is a coach who's basically calling everyone an idiot who doesn't pick him. So, Ziggy Schmidt, come on. Get with it.
But
let's not call Obafemi Martins in Seattle the underdogs. They still have the press.
Yeah, no
they still have the
there.
Coverage.
Hey, a couple of things to get to before we get out of here. First, a miracle. I mentioned it. Chivas USA knocking out off RSL. I think, RSL had like 75% possession in that game. So, you know, big props to Wilmer Cabrera. They got it done. That's, but he didn't seem to like revel in it, which he probably can.
When the final whistle blew, he was coming off. He basically walked towards Jeff Kassar to the opposing coach, almost embarrassed.
Really?
That he won. Yeah. You look at the body language.
Your tactics are your tactics, and if they get a result, they get a result.
They can thank Nat Borchers for it though, because Nat Borchers knocking out Quan Watson Serbo, Chris Schuler. Basically, they collided heads, two teammates.
Yeah,
so Schuler had to leave the game. They brought in Rich Balchin, and he didn't have a good second half.
No, he did not. A bad pass leading to that goal. An incredible chip from Kubo. That's terrible that that didn't really go in, but yeah. Balshin, space cadet on the back post, and Felix Borja jumps in there. We talked about Cahill a little bit there with Kyle. We didn't really explain it a ton. Here's what happened. Essentially, you know, I think either veiled or directly, Cahill, how do I say this politically correctly? He doesn't really like the role he's playing, it doesn't seem. Right. And he doesn't like people implying that the fact that he's going on international duty with Australia should be a knock on him. He has started, I believe, the same number of games for both the Red Bulls and Australia this year at 17. He came into that game against Houston and put a two-footer in on Boniac Garcia and got immediately red carded. So he's going to be suspended anyway. The first thing I thought when I saw that was, he can't possibly have meant that, but that was a pretty terrible tackle at that point.
He's been late on two-footed tackles for the last season now. Consistently, he has made mistakes and come in late and hard on tackles, even in the friendlies.
What I thought was interesting is that Dax McCarty asked about it afterwards, didn't give the typical like player speak where they're like, oh, I have to see a replay. I couldn't really see. I don't know. That may or may not have been a red card. Either way, you know, we won the game. He was like, no, from my vantage point, that's fair. That was a two-footed tackle over the ball. He deserved red.
Look, while I'm not going to get into Tim Cahill's head, no one knows what he was doing on that play. I think he may have been frustrated, and sure, it comes out in plays like that. But who is kidding themselves that Tim Cahill has ever been an important member of this team? I mean,
Are you kidding me?
He has never been an important part of this
team. That's crazy.
He carried them last year.
Do you remember the first, 15, 20 games he's played?
It was a slow start.
What was production? Slow start.
Yeah, it was a slow start.
He needed a whole season.
He was huge for them last season when they won the Supporters Shield.
Huge?
Yes.
What?
Down that stretch when they won all of those games, when he had two goals against Houston that won them the game, he was huge.
That's the one game that you're going to point out. He had the game.
This is
the goal after
we know this Simon Borg argument technique already. Don't try to pull it this time.
No. Tim Cahill has not had the impact that I think he thinks he's having, or that everyone else. I think Tim Cahill has gotten a pass, to be honest, because he's the good guy, because people like him, because he's on Twitter and Instagram. He's gotten a pass. He has not played up to snuff over the last couple of years. Let's be honest.
Not up to snuff. Hey,
not as much as you'd expect from a DP.
Okay, let us know what you think, Red Bull fans. I'm sure that one is going to have some dissenting opinions at Extra Time Radio on Twitter, extratime@mlssoccer.com via email. When we come back, the mailbag, I got some second assist numbers for you. And look, Landon Donovan, he really is the best assist man in MLS this year.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime@mlssoccer.com or tweet at Extra Time Radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
Hey, this is Carlos Bocanegra from Chivas USA, and you're listening to Extra Time Radio.
Back now on Extra Time Radio with the guys Simon Borge, David Goss. I am Andrew Wiebe, and we are into the mailbag, and we have quite the email here from Jason in D.C., who thinks a lot more of us than we think of ourselves. We mentioned, you know, we might need some extra prodding, or Dave might need some more time to do a third show a week, perhaps even more. He says, how much would I need to request from you to start a Kickstarter campaign for three shows per week? $100,000? He says it's totally doable. Just say the word, make the time, Goss. $100,000, that might be selling us way, way, way too far.
I'm actually going to surprise you here. I would take $100,000 a year if you asked me to do this show three times a week. I would accept that number.
Yeah, for someone who has trouble turning in his timesheets now, yeah. I am sure. Daniel Holton, Atlanta, says he completely agrees with Simon on Ibarra and Green, actually. It's too hard to know how good a player will be if they haven't played at a high level. I'm sure that we will easily be able to pick out a few deserving MLS players or even Euro players who weren't selected. These guys have proven themselves at a higher level than Ibarra has. It's not snobbery. It's a fact.
Amen.
And there's nothing wrong with that. Tyler Kitchens just wanted to discuss Simon's reaction to the potential call-up of Miguel Ibarra. It's no longer potential. Simon took the position that there should be someone in MLS who should have received that potential call-up instead. Can you please ask him to elaborate on his opinion? Given the size of our country, I feel it's entirely possible that there could be potential U.S. Men's National Team talent in lower divisions. Simon didn't seem to agree, though. At the very least, what's the worst that could come of giving a look? We're not necessarily at the point where all of our first-team talent should be coming from first division football teams as one might expect from a European or South American nation.
Think about this. Santiago Muniz was playing in a park, and then he played for Newcastle in the U.S.
Making reference to a movie here that not a lot of people have watched. By the way, I saw there was a FIFA movie that, like, bombed. Did you see that? Like the,
there
like
was
the documentary.
Yeah, I saw a bunch of stuff about like justifying FIFA or something like that. This is why FIFA's good. Anyway,
so
respond,
not the first
please.
FIFA movie
respond,
that,
please, to Tyler Kitchens.
That bombed. Yeah, to me, there are other players out there. I lost my train of thought. Where is it? What, Ibarra is the issue?
He's saying Ibarra. He's like, you know, aren't there? Isn't it reasonable?
Can't there be players in this country that fall through the cracks
that are not discovered?
Ibarra is not the first player from a second division to be called into his national team. It's happened before. But I believe that in the United States, we still have guys in MLS who have not gotten a look, mm-hmm. who deserve a look. So to me, before you give an Ibarra a chance, they should get the chance. And if we go to each team, there's at least a guy on every team that I think has played well enough to earn a call-up. That's just, man, I feel strongly about it. Now, again, though, I give Klinsmann, I cut him slack for this on this point. If he needs the guy to fill a certain role, then, you know, being a lefty and being a left winger, then all of a sudden the options in MLS become few and far between. Mm-hmm. And that's an indictment in MLS of the fact that they're not recruiting enough left-footed wingers that can do that kind of job. Ever since Breck Shea left, who's the next left-footed winger aside from Justin Mapp, who's now playing inverted?
Right, that are American.
That's
the key. There's something. You get the Fabian Castillos of the world that are, you know, Colombian, but we don't have that guy. I think Fabian Castillo, boy, he'd be an exciting prospect for the U.S. in that position. For now, though, we'll have to see if Miguel Ibarra gets there, and if you have to eat some humble pie, I'm looking at a recipe right now. This has a steak and ale filling, so there's no innards in this one. How do you feel about steak and ale in a pie?
It would be delicious.
Yeah, I know. That's kind of the problem here is that I want you to have to really grimace, really give us
what
your trademark
you like?
Grimace.
You guys cooking it. That's my biggest issue here. Okay. Like, if you found me a professional humble pie cook baker,
yeah,
then I'd be
good.
Better,
I'm glad.
Feel better about it.
Maybe we can find a humble pie out there and tell you that someone else made it, but it's really us and we haven't washed our hands. And
I would be
raw
able to
chicken
tell.
Everywhere.
I'd be able to tell.
I'd be able
would
to
you?
Tell.
Would
yeah.
you?
Oh,
He's
yeah.
very careful. He's very careful. Thomas in Parts Unknown, still enjoying your shows, although I think you should be nicer to Simon. Winky face.
Simon
disagree.
Getting a lot of love here.
I know. Have you ever used a winky face? Do you know what a winky face is?
No, I don't use those. I think they're lame.
Okay. No winky faces for Simon Borg. Also, for someone who was saying to be nicer to you. Yeah. Also, I was wondering if MLS collects data to differentiate primary and secondary assists. If so, who are the different leaders? Are the lists divergent? If not, why not? Some critiques of Landon sparked this question. I saw those as well. People saying, hey, you got a ton of secondary assists this season. So I went and I pulled up the numbers. Landon Donovan is indeed leading MLS, tied with Robbie Keane for second assists this year. He has five. Both of them have five. Marcelo Sarvis has four. He's next. I think that speaks probably to the way LA plays. Perhaps a lot of those guys opening up play for their teammates. Diego Valeri also with four. Michael Bradley with three, and the list goes down. But primary assists, Donovan also leads in that with 14. The guys behind him, Valeri with 10, Thierry Henry with 10, Robbie Keane has 9 of those. Intentional assists is another category. That's one where it's literally you put this guy on a platter, he scored it, and Donovan leads that as well with 12. Javier Morales has 11. So, hey, look, he's doing pretty well there. I also, interesting enough, I looked back at every year since 2011 to see if this is the most secondary assists since then, because that's when Opta started gathering their data. It is tied for that. Diego Valeri had 5 in 2013. And then in 2012, Roy Miller, Chance Myers, David Beckham, and Graham Zusi all had 4. And to finish this off before we discuss here, since 2011, once again, when Opta started collecting MLS data, the most second assists in the league, Graham Zusi with 14, 5 more than the next closest. So that tells you something there. Landon Donovan has 9 in that spell, and that's tied for second. Over that same period, intentional assists, Landon Donovan, 3rd, 32. Brad Davis with 35. So what's that say to you guys? What do you think about Landon Donovan's assist style? And, Dave, I know you do some Opta analyzing, so you might have a unique perspective.
Well, the second assist is supposed to be if the pass opens up the play. Not if they're continuing to push the play forward, but if it really opens up the area for them to play. And I think the reason you see it with L.A. is because of their style, and it's the pass that launches the counterattack a lot of the time. So if he plays that through ball to Zardes, Zardes races down the field and then plays it over to Keane. They have a lot of that. So I think that's why they get so many that's why him and Keane are so high on the second assist list.
Ultimately, if he set the record, he set it in a league where secondary assists matter. So ever since the beginning of the league, secondary assists have been factored in. So if he has that record with the rules in place, with those guidelines, then all fairness. He won it fair and square.
Same boat there for me. Last one, but not least, AJ in Binghamton, New York.
Binghamton.
Okay.
Wow.
The geography of New York.
That was bad.
Binghamton. Yeah, that was bad.
My dad went to college.
We've seen several MLS stars take over the MLS Snapchat account this season. Last week, Dom Dwyer took us inside their trip to the White House. When will we see Simon Borg taking over Snapchat at MLS?
Do you know
what Snapchat is, since winky faces are not your thing?
No, I do. And Snapchat wanted all my contacts, and I refused to give it my contacts. So I have Snapchat, but it's just
so
me.
What would you snap? We've got like 20 seconds here. Give me a quick, like Snapchat, what would you do in 10 seconds? What are you going to do? You cooking dinner on a Sunday?
I mean, I'm sitting next to you all day, so I guess a bunch of versions of you.
Oh, wow. That would be like the most boring Snapchat of all time. My sister also big into it. I don't understand it. You don't get to keep it. It just goes away. So what's the point? I don't know. Hey, big thanks to our guest, Fox Soccer's Kyle McCarthy. Follow him on Twitter. And big thanks to you guys, David Goss, Simon Borg. I'm Andrew Eby. I won't be here on Thursday. These two, all you've got.